Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with fellow beat reporter Bob McGinn. Our podcast is brought to you by our friends at Cannon and Dunphy, and we appreciate their support of our coverage of the Green Bay Packers. This is another remote podcast. I am still in Connecticut with my family, and Bob is in Green Bay. Bob, how's it going this morning?
Good, Mike. It's a wonderful day in Green Bay. Sunny, about 34 degrees. It's supposed to be like 40 today, Mike.
40 degrees, wow.
Yep. That's the warmest since, I don't know, early December maybe?
Seems like it. It was weird. In Connecticut last week, it got up to 60 degrees on Wednesday, and then Thursday it snowed a foot.
Wow.
Man, we've got some weird weather. In the last 5 days, we've gotten about 20 inches of snow.
Wow.
Did you ever go skiing, Bob?
A little cross country, never downhill. How about you?
Yeah, I used to go downhill skiing. We used to have a program at school, elementary school, middle school, and high school, where you would sign up and one night a week for like 8 weeks, you'd get on the bus right after school and you'd go to this local place in Connecticut and you'd ski for 4 or 5 hours and then you get back at about 9, 10 o'clock at night. And that was pretty fun. And then I'd go with my friends and stuff on the weekend, but I used to love it. Downhill skiing's fun.
Yeah. You know, as a basketball player, boy, that was taboo. All those years, starting in grade school. No skating, no ice skating, no skiing.
Yeah, you can twist a knee doing that, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you go cross-country skiing?
I went up in the Copper Country, the Keweenaw Peninsula, Keweenaw County, Michigan, up by Houghton, Hancock. The course was the Quincy Mine course, and it was fantastic. Snowed just about every day when we were there in February for about 4 or 5 days with some friends. And, yeah, it was great. That was about 30 years ago, 35, something like that.
Is it as good of a workout as people say it is?
At that point, it sure was, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, could be 15, 10 degrees, and people would say, hey, now don't overdress, just work, because within 5 minutes you'll be breaking a sweat, and we did, yeah.
Very cool, very cool. I've never gone snowshoeing. That's another one that people up here do a decent amount.
I'd like to try it, too. I never have, right?
Yeah. Well, hopefully some of that warm weather sticks around for when I get back to Green Bay. That would be nice.
Yep.
Bob, it was your choice on the music this week. I recognized it, not necessarily somebody that I could pick out of a crowd, but I've definitely heard the song before. Why don't you tell everybody what we have this week?
That's Mr. Al Jarreau, We're in This Love Together, 1981, went to number 15 on the charts. Al Jarreau passed away on Sunday, Mike. He was 76. They saluted him at the Grammy Awards Sunday night. Al, I heard WTMJ radio this morning when I was driving, and one of the people said that maybe Al is the greatest musician ever to come from Milwaukee, the greatest artist. And he might be. I mean, I'm going to read from Piet Levy's story, our A1 story today in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He won 7 Grammys, and he's the only vocalist in Grammy history to win in the jazz, pop, and R&B categories. How about that, huh?
That's pretty impressive.
He graduated from Milwaukee Lincoln High School, which was a basketball juggernaut in the 50s and 60s, won a bunch of state titles. Some of the greatest teams in Wisconsin prep history, if not the greatest. Then he went to Ripon College, and he graduated in 58 from Lincoln, played basketball at Ripon. The Ripon Redmen at that point studied psychology and formed his first vocal group, the Indigos. Graduated in 62, then he was off to the University of Iowa, earned a master's in vocational rehab, and he became a full-time musician in 1968. He never forgot his hometown. He contributed a lot of money to various social agencies, I guess you would say, in Milwaukee County. Often, one of his requests was that in lieu of any flowers, that he wants any donations to go to help young kids in Milwaukee. He's very concerned about some cuts in state government in which the fine arts were being cut from schools. Received a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 2001.
That's pretty cool.
He was still doing 50 concerts annually. Mr. Al Jarreau.
And you said, how old was he when he passed?
76. Okay. Died in L.A. on Sunday.
Gotcha.
Quite a man.
Yeah, I mean, that's a heck of a resume, especially because to cross over from pop to R&B is not necessarily that big of a change, but to also be honored in the jazz category, that jumps out to me as pretty impressive. I'll ask you something that my friends and I debate all the time. If you could play music for a living and be a big time, you know, musical artist in whatever genre you wanted, or if you could be a professional athlete in whatever sport you wanted, which one would you choose?
I would take the musical.
I think I would too. I think it would be so fun to just travel the world and play music everywhere.
Just to be on that stage, I mean, it's a little bit different level, but I talk to my daughter and my son-in-law. Yeah, and they just, every time they're in these gigs, man, they're just jacked for it.
It's fun. I remember at our high school, we had an annual Battle of the Bands type competition every year called Jam Fest, and there was a brand new auditorium built toward the second half of my high school, years, and it held about 1,500 people, and that place was full. And to play in front of 1,500 people with lights and a stage and all this kind of stuff, it was fun, man, and there's nothing really like it. I was just talking to some of the guys that were in the band the other day, and I think somebody has a home video of it that we're trying to find so we can take a look at it from back then.
Wow. I'm going to just mention this now, Mike. Just in the last month or so, I started taping these interviews on AXS TV, like AXS, and it's on channel 340 on my DirecTV system. And these are these hour-long interviews, the big interview with Dan Rather, the former newsman extraordinaire. And I've been watching these lately, and they're reruns. His new season starts tomorrow with Kid Rock. But just in the last couple weeks, I've watched, let's see, Greg Allman, Willie Nelson, Neil Young, and Loretta Lynn. And they're amazing hour-long pieces. I would encourage everyone to check these out. he's a strange, unconventional interviewer, a fantastic interviewer, and he just sits with these guys. They just sit there for an hour. And it's extremely interesting.
I was looking up, you've mentioned this to me before, and so I finally got around to looking up AXS TV. And when it first started, one of the co-owners was Mark Cuban of the Dallas Mavericks.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. Believe it or not, they actually had a basketball tournament on that network. It was one of those early season college basketball tournaments where, you know, four or five teams go to some exotic location in November and play. And I remember UConn was in it. I think they did like some tournament in the Bahamas where they were carrying the early round games. So I don't actually know what the purpose of the channel is. It seems to have all kinds of different stuff, but those interviews sound really interesting. Have they said at all who's on the schedule for this season beyond the premiere?
Yeah, just in the advertisements that would appear during these reruns. I can't remember after Kid Rock, but there was two or three other names. Man, I'm glad I'm taping that. I just tape the whole series now, and they just pop onto my DVR.
That's pretty cool. What was I going to say? Of the ones you've watched, which one did you find the most interesting?
Well, Greg Allman, he would have been my choice of music today had it not been for the death of Al Jarreau.
Right.
So I'll discuss Allman later, Mike, with my next podcast pick there. Neil Young, you know, I mean, he came up when I was in college and, you know, forming opinions and things. And, I mean, I love this guy. I would say that Neil Young one.
Gotcha.
Really sucks.
Gotcha. Very cool. Very cool. So I guess, at this point we should probably get into a little bit of Packers talk since we've gone about 10 minutes here. And, I'm sure our boss will be happy that we're actually going to talk about what we're supposed to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our second podcast in the last 2 weeks, and we'll have another one coming up, I think, next week. Last week we did an overview of sort of the end of the season and just the team in general, our thoughts on how everything ended and more broadly what we thought of the year overall. And this week we're going to take a look at the offense and sort of break that unit down a little bit more in depth. Of course, you had your season grades that ran in the paper about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. And that's what we know both of us have in front of us right now. So where do you want to start, Bob? Where should we look at this offense?
Well, Mike, when we start with offense, we have to have the same order. It's got to be wide receiver, tight end, O-line, QB, and running back, okay?
Yep.
It's just the way it always is and the way it has to be, Mike. Just like in basketball. In the old days, the old scorebooks would have forward, center, guard when you enter that starting lineup. And to this day, I know there's all kinds of ones and threes and twos and fives, but to this day, I try to configure that lineup to those FFCGG and put that lineup down in that way, Mike.
Did you ever score a game, Bob?
Oh, my mother taught me how to score a high school game off the radio when I was about six.
Yeah?
And to this day, I kind of use the same system.
Cool. Very cool. So where are we going to start? Which receiver would you want to talk to first?
Well, let's go to the number one. That was Jordy Nelson.
Okay.
Jordy, I gave him a B, a solid B. He played a lot better later as the year went on, no question. I mean, in midseason, I was just wondering where his year was going to end up and where his career was headed. But he was, you know, what he said and what others said, that further we'd get away from that ACL, the better he would be, and he was. How many touchdowns? He had
15. I think he finished with 15.
Yes, he did. Okay. He played 1,080 snaps, four fewer than Devontae Adams. He had 9 drops. His yards after the catch average was not good, 3.58, lowest since his rookie year. You know, in the beginning of the year, it looks like his legs weren't really there, and he just was kind of looking for a place to fall down, but he did better in that department later on. So I thought Jordy had a good year. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I thought he had a good year as well. You know, I didn't really know what to expect from Jordy Nelson because with this being only my second season, you know, of course I was familiar with him having watched the Packers on television, but I'd never really seen him play in person. And so I was pleasantly surprised as the season went on. I thought through the first 4 or 5 weeks, not only did he not necessarily look comfortable, but I don't necessarily think he knew exactly how he was going to get open, you know. And I think that, you know, when you go back and you look at some of his plays in previous years, it's very clear that he knows exactly what he wants to do. He anticipates how his own movements are going to influence the defense. And I think coming back from this, he just wasn't sure how he was going to fare and what he was going to do to have success. But as the season went on, you saw that there were really three big areas, at least from what I saw, that he really excelled in. One, of course, was the red zone. And you and I have discussed this before. His intelligence in the red zone and also his keen sense of what Aaron Rodgers is going to do at any moment allow them to be extremely potent, you know, inside the 20-yard line. The second thing that he did really well is I think he took advantage of when teams gave him a cushion on the outside. You saw a couple of those quick throws from Rodgers where Nelson would catch it, and then he would pick up just 6-7 yards, and maybe he ducks out of bounds or gets taken down or whatever the case may be. But you can't, you know, throw in the towel at a 6 or 7 yard gain. That's not bad at all. And then the third thing that I saw was that his ability to find success against zone defenses was huge. I thought that whenever opposing defenses went zone, he found a way to get open in the middle of the field especially, and Rodgers found him. So those were the big three takeaways that I had from Nelson's season.
Then we got Devontae Adams. I gave him the same B as Nelson. He had a bad season a year ago, partially due to injury, and then he blossomed into, I call him a legitimate starter here, a legitimate number two. He lost some weight. He was tough to jam, really tough to jam. Fast hands, quick feet, improved technique. He didn't scare people with his speed, but, you know, he had 6 plays of more than 35 yards. That led the team. He had 21 plays of 20 or more. That tied the team lead, I think, with 20, maybe at 22. He led it, I think. Did much better after the catch. Average went up from 3.02 to 4.81. He dropped 9 of 1 to 45, but 6.2%, that's no problem. His drop rate last year was 12.5%, 12 of 96. I liked pretty much everything about his season this year, Mike.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought that, you know, well, the big thing with Adams, of course, is health. You know, there's guys in this league, whether it's on the Packers or another team, that are better than others at playing hurt or playing with injuries. And I think that now, with this season and last season, we've seen that Adams is not necessarily a guy that plays really well or can find a way to play really well when he's banged up. We saw that last year with the high ankle sprain and then, of course, the knee problem that ultimately ended his season. And this year, he stayed healthy all year, which was a huge contributor to his success. And then, of course, in the playoffs, he gets hurt. He takes the field in Atlanta anyway, and he's basically a shell of himself. He caught that one little touchdown where he made a nice move to get open inside, I think it was inside the 5-yard line even. But other than that, he was not much of a factor. And so with Adams, it comes down to health. And unfortunately, that's not necessarily something that you can rely on year to year, because you never know if guys are going to get hurt, whether it's a fluky injury like Nelson had last year with the ACL, or of course, just from the rigors of the game. I think the area that impressed me the most about Adams was his ability to gain yards after the catch, despite not having great speed or acceleration or whatever the case may be. But he found ways to create enough separation from defenders where by the time he was catching the ball, he had room to run a little bit. And I thought he did a nice job even in the open field with a couple spin moves and some jukes and things like that. So I think his close quarters elusiveness offsets a little bit of his lack of speed. And I thought he had a very good season.
C-plus grade went to Randall Cobb. You know, he dropped 14 balls in 2015, more than any Packer receiver in the last 25 years. He cut that down to 2 out of 105 targets, a team-best drop rate of 1.9%. He's been up and down with his hands over his career. It's just inexplicably, I don't really know what's going on there, but he caught them all this year, 2 drops in 105. Led the club in yards after the catch, 5.05. Missed some games because of injury. Obviously, he's a better slot than outside. You know, I don't think he's as quick as he used to be. And he doesn't have great deep speed, but he still can be a mismatch for some average to below nickelbacks. Played 46 snaps as a running back. He takes a pounding, you know, and that's hurt him. He's a C-plus, and I guess that's just what he was.
I think in your in the paragraph you wrote about Cobb, you mentioned that even though he's still relatively young, perhaps some of the physicality he's absorbed over the years has, you know, slowed him down a little bit, whether it's from, you know, just an explosive standpoint or week to week with how his body's able to hold up. What did you see that sort of made you think that maybe his body is giving out a little bit?
The number of injuries, I guess, Mike, for a couple years in a row now is 2 or 3. I mean, last year he had a bunch. He just had injuries. And I can't – when he's out there, yeah, he's not as quick and he's not as fast as he was his second and third years. I guess just that. It's hard to put your finger on, but he's just not as explosive, dangerous, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that will be pretty interesting to me is – how they choose to utilize Cobb next year if they continue to find ways to put Nelson in the slot more and more. We saw as this season went on that you could argue Nelson was just as effective, if not more effective, out of different alignments in the slot than he was, you know, on the traditional outside spot. And that creates a little bit of a dilemma for Randall Cobb because he is not nearly as effective outside as he is in the slot. And so it'll be interesting to me to see how they split that or what they do with different guys, because you want to have Nelson as effective as possible. And I think in the slot is perhaps more of his future, similar to what we've seen with Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin. As they get older and older, they move inside more and more and continue to find ways to succeed. So that'll be something that we'll have to keep an eye on over the next 6 months.
All these routes are so short, aren't they, Mike? These little one-steppers and checks at the line and those little bubble screens. And it's hard to evaluate these receivers, you know. At least when I go back to Mike Holmgren and then even further back with Bob Schnelker, with James Lofton, it's just, I don't know, these Hall of Fame voters who have to evaluate today's wideouts with ones of the past, different game, boy, it really is. Different qualifications. I think it's easier now to play wide receiver, but I don't know. I'm glad I'm not doing that.
I'm glad I'm not a corner, that's for sure. I mean, I don't know how you stop some of those one-step throws and things like that, and obviously the physicality rules have changed a little bit to favor offenses, and so being a DB just does not sound like an enviable job to me anymore.
I mean, you're playing 6 yards off in some kind of coverage, and Rodgers gets that ball with such velocity to that guy so quickly, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, Mike, we both stood on a football field. It's 53 yards wide. That was a quarterback. That's a long throw out there to a guy out there 18 yards, you know, but he gets it there in lightning fashion. Then all of a sudden you got somebody with a ball and a lot of room out there, and the corner is now coming up trying to break down to make a tackle. It's pretty effective stuff.
It definitely is. It's a different game for sure, but there's no doubt that it works.
All right, Mike. So then after that, Geronimo Allison got a C-. And, you know, people get all worked up on these grades. Yeah, we discussed this last week, Mike. I'm a hard grader, no doubt about it. I'm campaigning against grade inflation. A C- for a guy like Allison didn't play that much, 305 snaps in the last 13 games. That's really a good grade. I mean, if you're not a starter and playing a lot of snaps, you're not going to get anything whole lot higher than a C-. So I thought he had a good year. He's 6'3.5". He came off that practice squad. He did it in August when we were out there every day, Mike, for the complete practice. He only dropped 1 out of 35. He doesn't run great, you know, the 4.59 from Illinois, but the acceleration wasn't bad. I liked what I saw. How about you?
Yeah, I liked what I saw as well. This is a guy that moves very well. He almost seems to glide a little bit as he runs across the field. He has very crisp routes, good hands, and he just seems to be a very smooth player. And I think that quality combats, I think, his lack of breakaway speed. And I think Rodgers trusts him, and I think he's going to have a bigger role next year.
Yeah. All right. Next, we got Jeff Janis, I guess. He got a D+, a lot of that for special teams value. He played a career-high 265 snaps, targeted just 19 times, caught 11, dropped 1. I didn't see a whole lot of development, Mike, from August to the end of the year. Granted, he wasn't thrown to very much. Why, it's hard to say. He's got another year on his contract. I wrote his best chance for success probably lies with another team. Maybe somebody could take advantage of him. I just don't know if it's a dead end now, or he'll be back in camp. He's a good special teams player, although his impact with the broken hand wasn't really felt till I'd say early December. So I don't know. He's a small town kid, eager to please, but hasn't really meshed with Aaron Rodgers. How do you see this, Jeff Janis?
I just don't know if he can play the receiver position in the National Football League. You know, the best success he had on offense this year was on those two end-arounds that they ran with him, or maybe it was three, and one of them went for a touchdown. And so I kind of, you know, I hate to use this word because I don't think it's the right word, but I can't really think of another one. I think he's kind of like a gimmick player at this point, you know, a guy you can put in there for one or two plays, you know, maybe as many as five in a game where you're trying to get him the ball in creative ways, or maybe you just send him deep on a fly route whenever he's in there and see if he can get behind the defense. But I just don't think this is a guy that's going to be able to play offense every snap of every game. And so I just don't know. If he's not going to be an elite, elite special teams player the way he was last year, I think it's going to be tough for him to really make a claim that he can contribute in some meaningful way. So hopefully, for his sake, he can bounce back and have a better OTAs and training camp than he did last year, but I was disappointed as well. I thought he was going to improve more than he did, especially given, you know, the way the season ended last year with that game in Arizona. I just think that he kind of either stayed the same or maybe even took a step back.
Yeah. He's direct. He's approachable. I enjoyed dealing with him always, you know.
Oh, I agree. Very nice guy. Very polite.
Yep. Yeah, I just don't know. So, you know, Mike, a year ago at this time, we used to be deluged by emails from fans and readers who wanted to know, well, McCarthy's got to use Jeff Janis. I thought it was a mistake last year at the end of the year in evaluating McCarthy that he didn't use him more. Now, there's none of that talk. I have heard none. How about you?
Somebody asked me if Jeff Janis could play cornerback when they had no corners, and somebody else asked if they could convert Jeff Janis to a tight end, but the emails in which people are suggesting that Janis needs to play more or that Janis is the savior, those have definitely been ebbed, that's for sure.
Yep. He's a straight line guy. He's a little stiff, and some scouts thought that of him coming out of Saginaw Valley, so, and that's why he fell to the seventh. Workout numbers were great, but he is what he is, I guess. All right, now Trevor Davis, the rookie from California, the Golden Bears. He got a D. Some big plays early. He did a great job against Atlanta in game 8, I believe. He had a 55-yard punt return, the team's longest in 19 games. Dropped a couple balls in games 3 and game 9. Wasn't targeted again. He only had 6 balls thrown to him all year. He can run. Quiet. He's a little shy. He needs strength. He can get knocked off routes. His speed is real low, and but he's got to be able to get off the press better. Trevor Davis at D. How do you see him, Mike?
Well, I think the Tennessee game is one that he's going to want to forget for a long, long time. You know, that was the game where he muffed that punt and had one really bad drop along the sideline. So, it'll be interesting to me to see whether or not that shakes his confidence at all going into OTAs and training camp, because for a while this was a player that looked like he could be a difference maker.
All right, number 7, the 7th guy on the 60-man roster at the end of the year was Max McCaffrey. 4 weeks on the practice squad, promoted to the 53 the day before the title game. Got size at 6'2", 200, ran a 4.45. Free agent, cut by the Raiders. I really don't know anything about him other than his dad, you know, had the former Bronco and Giant. He caught 565 balls over a 13-year career. Max McCaffrey, I didn't, you know, he was off my radar before the draft. I just don't know.
I don't know anything about him either.
Okay. So that's the receivers coming off the practice squad. They got Antoine Goodley, the guy from Baylor, I believe it is, isn't it? Goodley?
Yeah, Baylor.
Yeah. So I don't know anything about him. Anyway, so let's go to tight ends. All right, so it was a two-man depth chart after Perillo got cut. You wrote about Sandlin today. Mike, you want to start out and talk a little bit about Bo Sandlin? Because he's coming off, re-signed off that practice squad, and he's the number 3 guy right now.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely is the number 3 guy, and it's clear that the organization likes him from the top down, really. They bumped up his salary on the day after Christmas, and generally they won't do that if they don't think the guy has a little bit of promise. And Sandlin was receiving interest from other teams at the time, which is why they bumped up his pay a little bit. And then, you know, where we get to stand in practice is right next to where the tight ends do their individual drills. And I noticed that from late December through the end of the season, Sandlin got more and more and more praise from tight end coach Brian Angelicchio. And so I just think that the coaches like him. They like his potential. They like his size. They like that he can run a little bit better than Richard Rodgers. And so right now, like you said, he's the number 3 guy, and I think he's got a real legitimate chance to make this roster next year.
Yeah. You know, the assumption is they'll re-sign Cook. Rodgers will be back. They need to get Cook here because I don't think they can afford a draft pick at tight end unless some great players fall in their lap, but so you're right on Sandlin. Okay. All right, Jared Cook. I gave him a B-. He closed fast, obviously. McCarthy and Rodgers spoke very highly of his role in the offensive turnaround. 5 drops. He missed Well, he didn't have any drops hardly in training camp, Mike, or the first nine games. It was amazing because that's the problem he had in Tennessee and St. Louis. But he ended up with five drops, 6.2 rate, compared favorably with JerMichael Finley's drop rates in his last 3 years, 2011 to 2013. You know, he's a little stiff. He's not real flexible, not as athletic as Finley, but he's a more dependable catcher. And he has that seam-stretching speed. He's got a long catching radius. You know, he was kind of a willing blocker, sort of surprised me, but he wasn't overly effective. He was okay. Missed six games with the ankle, but he still played 479 snaps. UFA, 1 year, 2.75, has expired. All right, Mike, Jared Cook.
Well, I think the biggest thing that jumped out to me about Jared Cook was the chemistry he built with Aaron Rodgers. And you noted this, I think, in a couple of your game stories in the playoffs, just the number of targets that Cook was getting week after week after week. There were games, I think it might have been even the Atlanta game, where he was the most targeted player on offense. Now, granted, he was also probably the healthiest player on offense, but you're not going to get 12 or 13 targets, whatever it was, if Rodgers doesn't think you can catch the ball and get open on a consistent basis. And so I think there's no doubt that Rodgers is a big fan of the guy. I think he wants him back here pretty badly, and I would expect their chemistry to only get better if they have another season in Green Bay.
Now, Richard Rodgers. I gave Richard a C-minus this year. You know, without Cook, he averaged 51.2. That's the six games Cook missed. And he averaged, his snap count average was 27.7 in 13 games with Cook. So he clearly was the number two. His playing time was down. Hand down playing time. Wait a minute now. He had 51%. Forget that. He played about 50% of his snaps with his hand down. All right. He reported lighter this year, Mike, about 15 lighter. I thought he definitely was more athletic in training camp because of it. He has more wiggle moving down than Cook on the move. He's a little bit shiftier than Cook on the, you know, running the stem of the route. Obviously, his speed does not even come close to Jared Cook, and that's why he lost his job. His blocking, I don't know. He dropped way too many this year. His drop rate was 10.6%, which was kind of a shocker with as tremendous hands as he has. His blocking just remains well below average. Now, you know, part of that could have been the weight drop, but he wasn't effective at 270 or at 255. He charged with 10.5 bad runs. I mean, that's poor, but it's less than 16.5 last year and 13 as a rookie in 2014. Richard Rodgers, C-minus. Mike?
Well, I thought that for a guy that played as much as he did last year, now granted, that was partly out of necessity, but I mean, I remember talking to you on the podcast and talking to our colleague Tom Silverstein. There were games where he was almost playing 100% of snaps, and because they just didn't have any other options, really. He was at 90% participation in certain games, and other games it was even higher. So for a guy to go from playing that much to playing as little as he did this year, especially down the stretch, I give him credit for saying all the right things as the season went on. I remember it might have been before the championship game or maybe it was before the Dallas game. I sort of asked him, I said, you know, what's kind of this year been like? I mean, you know, you go from having a large number of touchdown catches last year to basically not playing a whole lot this year. And he said, you know, I'm just happy to contribute however I can, and I don't think there's any doubt that Jared deserves the playing time he's getting based on the way he's been performing. And now we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. He certainly could have a little bit more frustration when it comes to meetings and things like that, but publicly he remained very composed, very politically correct, and I know that that's not an easy thing to do for a lot of these guys, so I give him a lot of credit for that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he'll be back, And then, okay, we got a three-man core with Sandlin. All right, now we go to the O-line, Mike. Let's start with the starters. We'll move from left to right, okay?
Okay.
David Bakhtiari got the best grade. He got an A-minus. That ties Aaron Rodgers for the best grade on the entire team. I define pressures, and I keep these myself. Pressures is the combination of sacks, knockdowns, and hurries. And it's just when I'm going through these tape on Monday or the day after the game, I've had the same criteria in my head. It's never changed. You could argue with my criteria, but at least it's been consistent. So I think you can look at players in Green Bay over time and at least look at their pressure totals and have an accurate depiction of how a guy improved. All right, Bakhtiari, as a rookie in 2013, he had allowed 37 pressures. Then the next year it went to 33. Last year it went to 27. This year it went to 19. And by and large, he played about the same amount of snaps every year. Okay. So you see the gradual growth improvement. This 19 this year was a tremendous number for a Packer left tackle. I thought he earned every penny of that money, that four-year, $49.677 contract he signed right before the season. I think he's a terrific player. He's gotten so much stronger, and therefore he can resist the bull rush. You know, he's sinking back two or three steps when five or six really is when Rodgers has to depart. Rodgers is just kind of extending on his own in most cases. The large majority of cases, he's just gone. Bakhtiari, he can handle the wide rush because he's athletic. I think he's really consistent. He won't give in even late in games, whether the team's way ahead or way behind. He just keeps playing at the same level. He knows statisticians are counting all his sack stuff and all his pressures. He's well aware of that. More power to him. It only helps the offense. And he did a lot better job in bad runs, too. He allowed just 9, Mike, which is the fewest of the starters. His numbers his first 3 years was 15.5 as a rookie, 19.5 his second year, 8 last year, and 9 this year.
He cut back on penalties, too, didn't he?
He sure did. His average was 9.3 or something like that, and he had 5 this year. I think he's really a good player. And he's got a shot to be an A here in the near future from A-minus to A.
I agree with everything you said, and so I'm trying to think of something I can add here that's different. And the only thing that I can think of when it comes to my own reflection on how Bakhtiari performed is this. I remember, you know, when we do the podcast every week, we go through the scouting report, and we would talk about who the premier pass rusher was, or there were times when we would say, man, this is going to be a great matchup with Bakhtiari against this guy. And then I felt that by Monday morning, I had completely forgotten about that matchup at all. And the reason for that is because Bakhtiari stoned just about everybody. I mean, there were very few weeks when he was beaten repeatedly by some of the premier pass rushers, not only just in the NFC, but also on teams around the league. And so by the time Monday came around, I didn't even remember the fact that that was supposed to be a great matchup because Bakhtiari was winning so one-sidedly in many, many weeks. And so that's really the best compliment I can give him.
All right, let's go to left guard. Lane Taylor replaced Josh Sitton right on the eve of the season after Sitton was cut. Lane, I gave him a C, a flat C, which is a really good grade for a first-year starter who had only played a couple hundred snaps in his first 3 years. He allowed 28.5 pressures. The highest Sitton ever allowed in the season was 18 in 2009, his first year as a starter. Last year he allowed 15. So Taylor's at 28.5. I mean, there's no comparison between the two players, and I think everyone understands that, I would hope. I liked a lot about Lane. He improved. He told me about a month into a season, I said, Lane, you're playing so much better than you did in this training camp. He says, yeah. I said, well, why? He said, it's just, you know, being next to Bakhtiari and the Treader all the time, it's just stepping up your game. And, you know, he must be a gamer. I don't know, but he played good football. Everybody, all the scouts you talk to, they said basically the line was, he's not pretty, he wins ugly, but they also have respect for the guy. And he's a, you know, fourth-year free agent out of Oklahoma State. He's got what scouts call a bad body, and there are shortcomings evident in quickness and flexibility. He led the club in bad runs with 13. But again, that wasn't a terrible number. Nothing like, say, a guy like Darren College had years ago or some of the weaker links. So I don't really think he's even a weak link. Wasn't penalized much. He had a good year. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to draft an interior player, and he's going to get challenged every year he's in the league. But for right now, he's a deserving starter, and an impressive player, Lane Taylor.
I agree with you. You know, I think that the biggest things that I noticed about him, first, and you and I have discussed this, is the fact that he doesn't have a great body. And, you know, maybe that's hard to appreciate for people that only watch the games on TV because they never see these guys without their pads on. But if you go down the locker room and you look at Bakhtiari, Lane Taylor, Treader and or Lindsley, TJ Lang, and Brian Bulaga, you know, Taylor is the one that's just built a little bit differently. He's not as naturally chiseled as some of those guys, and he's just a little bit rounder in terms of his appearance. But what impressed me are two things about the way he played. First, I thought the guy plays really, really hard, and there were no doubt that there were times where he was beat on a couple plays here or there, but I thought his effort was really impressive throughout the season. And then the other thing was durability. I mean, if you're going to be a guy that comes in and has to try and replace somebody like Sitton, the worst thing you can probably do, unless you're getting Aaron Rodgers hit left and right, is to just not be able to stay healthy. And up until the NFC title game, I don't think he had any issues all season long. I'm pretty sure he was in there just about the whole year. And as guys like TJ Lang were missing time, obviously Treader went down, Bulaga was in and out of certain games because of problems. I just thought that his steadiness and his ability to be available was impressive. So I thought he had a very fine season.
No, he's a hands outside pass blocker, Mike. He readily admitted that. That's the way he's always been. And he can allow those hands inside rather than inside because he has the girth to man up against bull rush. And it helps him then, with his hands outside, it helps him to take away an edge against a quicker three technique. And he's won with that style. He's played it his whole career. Credit to James Campen for allowing him to continue to do that. Campen's more of a hands inside guy. So it worked as well as the Packers could have hoped.
When you wrote about that hands inside outside, that's one thing that we didn't really get a chance to discuss. So really quickly, what do you mean by that for people that might not follow?
You know, since the big rule change in 78, when offensive linemen could extend their hands and get those elbows back inside, the target place in pass pro is breastplate of that pass rusher, and you're trying to shoot your hands towards that breastplate, get hands inside. That's just the way everybody is taught, almost everybody is taught in the NFL. But Green Bay this year, a lot of scouts pointed this out, and then I wrote about it in December. Green Bay had a lot of people with their hands outside, and the first move for Taylor and others, Bulaga also was a primary outside guy, is the hands would clasp on the outside of those shoulder pads. Not behind, on the outside, so you don't get holding. Now, if a guy starts getting an edge on you, you got to let go in a hurry. But that's the theory. People love to teach the hands inside because it's easier to stop a bull rush. You know, you're hitting the central point, the laws of gravity and leverage, I guess. But with hands outside, I can see it, that if you have the girth to prevent a walk back, then it's good because I think you've got a nice fulcrum, so to speak, to prevent the edge rush on either side of you, left or right.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And okay, there's no doubt that it worked for the Packers this season. Before we move to center, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back, take a look at the rest of the line, and then move through the remainder of the offense.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
The center, Corey Lindsley, he got a B. Pretty solid grade for Corey. Missed half the year with that hamstring. I thought he played well. I got no complaints about him. He's a good center.
Agreed, and he's also another guy that was able to stay healthy pretty much from the time he came back till the end of the season. That was really important. I thought he transitioned pretty seamlessly after missing half the year, and I think he's a solid player at center if Treader ends up leaving via free agency.
Right guard TJ Lang, he got a B+. I think it is probably the highest grade he's ever had. Foot and hip injuries limited him to 74.6% playing time in his eighth year. Had surgery on that hip after the year. He's a really good player. He's good in pass pro. He's good in run blocking. He's a leader. He's a tough guy. heck of a season for TJ Lang.
Agreed. I thought he played really, really well. I thought he was a huge, huge boost to this offensive line in terms of toughness and nastiness. The really only thing you can criticize him for is something that's out of his control, and that's injuries. You know, they say that injured guys keep getting injured, and unfortunately for TJ Lang, it seems like he's one of those guys that just continues to get hurt no matter what he does. But when he's in there and when he can play, he's pretty darn good.
Right tackle Brian Bulaga, he got a D. Now, he led the team in pressures allowed with 33, which is highest total since his rookie year of 2010, of 33.5. I still liked what he did. He did a great job in run blocking, 10 bad runs down from 17 last year. He's had injuries, but, you know, he lost weight this year, and he really played 97.3% of the snaps. He's a real good right tackle, Brian Bulaga.
Agreed. You know, I've only got 2 years to judge him by, but I thought he played much better this year than last year. Of course, he was healthier, and I thought he did a solid job opposite Bakhtiari.
Don Barclay, I gave him a D+. They gambled, Ted Thompson and the coaches, that Barclay would bounce back from his rough year in 2015, and he did. He played better. A year removed from that ACL. He's unrestricted. No idea if they're going to re-sign him or whatever, but Don Barclay played a bunch of positions.
How important do you think it was for his future to put on tape the type of performance he did in the NFC Championship game?
Yeah, I think you're probably quite important, Mike. I think he's going to get a job here elsewhere now, and a lot of it will be on that tape, yep.
Yeah, that was his best game, at least in the 2 years I've been here, and I remember you actually had him as one of your stars of the game, even though he came in relief. So credit to him for finishing strong.
All right, let's go to Kyle Murphy. Inactive for 15 of the 19 games, beat out Lucas Patrick to win the job, played 8 snaps from scrimmage all year. I just sort of kind of like him, Mike, as a strict right tackle. I don't know. He needs a lot of development and strength, but I think he might be okay.
He competes really hard. He's got a bad body, but I think he does have some potential to be a serviceable backup lineman.
Jason Spriggs, I gave him an F. Awful against Atlanta. You know, when he played those starting games at guard, at least it was somewhat competitive. Somewhat. But, again, he's just way too weak. There's no physicality. Gets knocked around. He's off balance. Plays light. Even as an extra tight end, he whiffed too much. He's got a long way to go. He's a second-round pick, and they can say whatever they want, but this player and everybody in those film rooms have seen this. He's a tremendous athlete, but he's got a long way to go to be a football player.
Do you think he needs to do anything to his weight over the offseason? In other words, do you think the Packers are asking him to put on 15 pounds if he can or something like that?
Depends where they want to play him, Mike, you know. As a tackle, maybe not. As a guard, I don't think he's a guard. And certainly if they expect him to play guard, he's got to. He's just got to get stronger and more physical, meaner. He just gets trashed, you know. That's the number one thing. You got to anchor, you know.
Agreed. And for a guy that you traded up for, it's not the first impression you were probably hoping he would make.
Nope. Okay, J.C. Tretter, he started the first 7 games, I believe it was, at center. Yep. Allowed 10 pressures and 8.5 bad runs. That's a lot. I still kind of like him. I gave him a C-. You know, of the 72 games over his 4 years, he's only been healthy enough to play in 35. I don't know if he's going to have a market. I just don't know. We'll have to see when. That'll be a very interesting situation to follow in free agency. They're certainly not good. I wouldn't think they're going to re-sign him. He's coming off a knee injury that didn't get better. That's J.C. Tretter.
Smart player, pretty athletic. Over the last 2 years, what I was most impressed with was when they would throw screen passes and he would be able to get out in front, and he can really move. And I think that in that regard, he probably impressed some teams, but I do think the injury history is one that will influence his market. I agree with you. I don't think he'll be back in Green Bay, but I do think he'll get a job because good centers and smart centers are hard to come by, and I think he has the potential to be a pretty good one.
Centers off the practice squad, Jacob Flores, and a guard, Lucas Patrick. They'll both be in camp in the offseason. All right, let's go to QB, Mike. They got 3 of them. Start with Joe Callahan in alphabetical order. Callahan got an incomplete. Mike McCarthy believes in him. He had him on the roster, taking up a spot for 10 of the 19 weeks. I've always said this. He's short, 6'1". He's slow, 4'9", 8'40". I just don't see it. He played 61% of the exhibition snaps, showed some good things, but, you know, that's against riffraff. That's Joe Callahan, incomplete.
The thing that I don't really understand about it is, unless you think the guy can be a serviceable backup, and maybe the Packers do, I have no idea, but I don't think he can be a legitimate backup that can go and win you the game. So if he's not that, then why are you giving him a spot on your roster? Because you have Hundley, so you don't need a backup. And if you don't think he's going to be good enough to be a backup at some point, why take up the roster spot, especially when this team was so banged up at other positions that they certainly could have used that spot to bring in somebody else or maybe even try a couple guys over the course of the last 6-7 weeks of the season just to see if anything would have helped, you know, maybe that secondary or that cornerback position. So I just don't get that. But, you know, kudos to Joe for impressing the coaches enough to bring him back and to give him that spot.
Yep. Brett Hundley. Somebody said they should trade Brett Hundley. Not now. They need him to back up Aaron Rodgers. Still don't know how good Hundley is, but I'm still going to go back to that rookie exhibition season when he looked pretty darn good. Set back by, what, it was an ankle injury all summer. Hardly played. Has never played a meaningful snap in the regular season, just the way the Packers want it. Got 2 years left. Time to start dealing him would be somehow next year if he has any value. But I don't know. I think they're much better protected with him than Graham Harrell. How about Hundley, incomplete?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say with Hundley because this was supposed to be his off season with Rodgers not really doing much in camp. And then with that ankle injury, he just didn't have a chance to show us or show, you know, the coaches anything in terms of actual game tape. So I don't know what they think about him. I still think they like him a lot, though, because of his competitiveness, and he is a smart player. I'm really interested to see how he looks in OTAs and camp this year because we haven't seen him in so long that it's hard to remember.
All right. Aaron Rodgers, he got an A-, tying Bakhtiari for the best grade on the club. He was a different player in the last 10 games than he was in the first 9. He cut way back on his fumbles. He cut on his interceptions. He rushed the ball well all year. He took too many sacks, 16 and a half of the 45 charged to him. He did not do well in two late-game situations early in the year. That hurt him, cost him home field advantage in a way. The 36-yard pass to Cook in the late seconds against Dallas will always live on. It got him the NFC title game. Aaron Rodgers is an outstanding player. Okay, Mike.
I agree. You know, this was the Aaron Rodgers that I hadn't seen before because I was so new to this team. And last season, you know, clearly he wasn't his typical self. And so to see what he was over the last 10 games of the season, it was just incredible. Some of the throws he makes and the plays he makes and the intelligence he shows on the field, whether it's getting drilled off the edge in Dallas and then immediately knowing to call timeout, or it's finding ways to roll in and out of the pocket or generate a free play here or there, like they got that touchdown to Richard Rodgers, I think it was, on a free play. And so it's just, you know, when he's at his best, you know, it's just impressive to watch him play the position all the way around. And I thought that what he did in the last 10 games was pretty remarkable.
All right, let's see, no quarterbacks on the practice squad. Okay, running backs, we got 8 on the final 53. And let's start with Ty Montgomery. Boy, I debated on this. I gave him a B- as a running back. A lot to like. You know something, Mike? It would have been easier to evaluate him if he would have had number 30, some other 39, or I don't know, some number that's unassigned rather than 88. Just kind of strange, man. But anyway, he's the team's best hope. He wants to play running back. A lot of scouts say he's not a running back. They insist he's a slot, a third down back. Did a lot of good things, rushing and receiving. Struggles in pass pro, but what do you expect? That's Ty Montgomery, B-.
I give him a lot of credit because this season could have really, really, really gone off the rails if he doesn't adjust as well as he did in a short period of time to that position change. And I thought his versatility, both as a runner and as a receiver, offered Aaron Rodgers a lot of different advantages, not only just from a production standpoint, but in his ability to identify coverages, because teams were playing Montgomery so many different ways. Some were treating him as a running back and putting linebackers on him. Others were treating him as a wide receiver and dedicating, you know, smaller and faster players. And so I think he was a really, really important indicator for Aaron Rodgers when it came to identifying coverages in the second half of the season. So I think he played a hugely important role, even if the production wasn't always where it probably should have been or probably where the Packers wanted it to be. I don't know if he's a full-time running back. I got to see him go through a training camp and absorb 30 days of hits, and then I think we'll have a better idea.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Eddie Lacy. He'll be unrestricted. I gave him a C. Played pretty well, Mike. He played 5 games, slamming the ball in there between the tackles, didn't fumble, caught the ball fine. His weight was getting up there, you know. He did some things in the offseason to help his weight, certainly. Then that weight was back on, got hurt, had, what was it, foot or ankle surgery. Okay, he's unrestricted. Mike, how do you see him?
I agree with you. I thought he played really well when he was in there. I thought he ran extremely hard. He was breaking tackles. He wasn't afraid of contact. He was bowling guys over. And I think if he stays healthy, I mean, I think he's going to have a pretty good year even with the weight. Now, that said, I think it's kind of inexcusable that this guy's weight can be such a problem. I mean, this is the National Football League where they have every dollar amount you could possibly want to invest in trainers and food and supplements and whatever the case may be. And so the fact that this guy just can't get his act together and keep his weight down is sort of a travesty.
Christine Michael was number 2 behind Montgomery down the stretch. Former Seahawk and Cowboy. He's a second-round pick of the Seahawks, I believe. Yep, late 2 that year. You know, Seattle got rid of him because he would not follow their zone scheme. He was either going too far wide or cutting back prematurely. They just couldn't handle it. He wasn't pressing the line of scrimmage, and they just didn't know. It was driving Tom Cable nuts. So he's the same way in Green Bay. He's undisciplined in everything he does. He's got some energy. He's got some fire. Got some strength. Poor in the passing game. I don't know. He's a D-minus for me, Mike, and I just don't see really why you got to do that again next year. I don't see it helping the ball club.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he'll be on the 53 next year. And I thought that you summed it up pretty well in, I can't remember if it was a recent rating the Packers or your end of season grades, where you said that there's no doubt this guy loves to play. You can see the intensity and you can see the passion, but he plays in such an abstract manner that it's probably detrimental to a team, despite the fact that he loves to be out there.
Abstract manner, huh, Mike? All right, Aaron Ripkowski, the second-year fullback, replaced John Kuhn. I gave him a C. He's not as good a blocker as William Henderson. Is he as good a runner as Kuhn when Kuhn was good? I don't think so. He ran into people too much. I just don't see much vision. He's got to improve as a blocker. He's too much whiffing on moving targets, head down. Having said that, you know, he caught the ball pretty good. He had really good ball skills until the fumble in the finale. I like him. He's a C, and he's a pretty good fullback, and they're hard to get.
I don't have too much to add, but I do think it would be interesting if you shared what some of the Falcons players told you about Ripkowski and that fumble from the championship game.
Yeah, Devondre Campbell, the weak backer, yes, he had never fumbled on tape, but these big guys who carry people and packs and get pushed by their offensive linemen, they think those guys are targets. They targeted Ripkowski, and it worked. And Campbell, he held him up, and Collins stripped it, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's exactly what they tried to do. And so Ripkowski's got to get down at times. You got to live and learn, you know?
It'll be interesting to see if he adjusts anything with his technique, because it's not often that you hear an opposing team say that a guy has ball security issues when there's no fumbles to speak of on the stat sheet. But clearly Atlanta saw something. They were able to exploit it, and it'll be really, really something to watch to see how often they let Ripkowski carry the ball next year.
Yeah. All right, the backup fullback was Joe Carriage, a rookie free agent. They are hard to find. I mean, every year in the draft series, people who have a fullback struggle to find him. You know, he showed some toughness in that inverted wishbone at times. His lead blocking, I'd say it was better than Rutkowski's. Just the opinion, not sure on that one. Scored 30 on the Wunderlich. Rutkowski scored 31. These are smart guys. He'll be back in camp.
Yeah, you know, I can't say too much about him, honestly. I didn't see him jump out off the tape on special teams. I do remember that inverted wishbone, but I just kind of thought he was one of the guys, and, I mean, he'll compete with Rutkowski, but I can't say too much about him.
Okay. John Crockett, the running back, spent all year on IR with a shoulder injury. I don't think he's back. He got an incomplete.
I agree. I don't think he'll be back either. Unfortunate for him that timing of that injury in training camp. I thought he was actually having a decent camp, but that's sort of how it goes sometimes.
Don Jackson, a running back who was signed after their dalliance with the Chief, Niall Davis, played 29 snaps, 10 carries, 32 yards. I don't know, knee cartilage damage might be worth an offseason look. Incomplete.
I think he'll have another look here, and I think McCarthy likes him. You know, I remember after the injury to Jackson, McCarthy said that he was excited about what Don was going to offer before he got hurt, and he was pretty effusive in his praise of the way Jackson handles himself, and so I think that he's going to get another camp invite.
And finally, James Starks. He got an F. There's no way around it. His average is a pitiful 2.3, wasn't sharp in pass pro, dropped two passes. Poor year. Season ended, you know, on December 12th, Range Rover collided with a semi-tractor trailer. It wasn't his fault. The other guy got a ticket, I believe. No alcohol. He'll be 31 this month. Won't be back here, obviously. I don't know. Still boggles the mind that the Packers didn't do more for the at least say something about this player after cutting him last week. This was the guy, Mike, on a Super Bowl winning team, the 13th, as they say in Green Bay, world championship team, that the Packers say, I will stress that. And just gone. A good player around that franchise facility, just gone after 7 years. But goodbye, up the door. That's cold, Mike. That's really cold.
Yeah.
All right, that's Starks, Mike.
I mean, the biggest takeaway for me, you know, people are going to rag on him for his production and things like that, and that's fine. The production was poor, but I think, honestly, the guy just has to be happy that he's here in general, because how often can a single car collide with a semi-truck and he only comes out with a concussion and nothing else? No broken bones, no internal damage, and he's still alive, honestly. I mean, it was just remarkable to me when I read the details of that accident and heard that he came out okay. So, yes, it was a terrible season for him football-wise, but the guy's just got to be happy to be here at this point.
Yeah. He had that $3 million contract waived from out under him. Not guaranteed, as everybody knows in the NFL. It's a different business. So that is it on the offense, Mike.
I think you wanted to move to special teams really quickly here at the end, Bob.
Do we want to? Okay.
Yeah, we got like 2 or 3 minutes. Let's go through it.
All right. So the kicker, Mason Crosby, I gave him a B. You remember the last thing more than anything else, and there was a missed field goal in Atlanta from 41, a brutal kick. Otherwise, he was pretty darn good all year long, really good. 867, ranked 11th in field goal percentage. He's just a good kicker, and he's a solid guy. He can make a tackle. I think everybody kind of respects him in the organization.
Agreed. The only thing that I can criticize him on is I thought his attempts at onside kicks were pretty poor this season. Other than that, I thought he was extremely solid, extremely reliable, and unfortunately for him, the bad taste will be left in everybody's mouth with that miss in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Good note on that, Mike. Yep, you're right. Jacob Shum was the new punter, replaced Tim Mastey. Surprisingly to me, Mastey was never signed around the league. I gave Shum a C-. 27th in gross, 24th in net. Average hang was 4.25. Mastey's last year was 4.09. Shum had, I guess, maybe one bad hold. I kind of thought he did all right, and he should get better. He's a young guy.
Agreed. I thought he had a decent season, and I remember last year Zook saying that hang time, and McCarthy said this as well, hang time was a huge priority for them going into this season. So even if the yardage totals were a little bit different than Mastey's in a worse manner slightly, I think they had to be pleased with the hang time given the amount of emphasis they put in that area.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brett Goode, I gave him a C, just gave him a C, you know.
Why doesn't Brett get an A, Bob? What did he do wrong?
Well, his velocity wasn't good, and he's not a good tackler. Mikey's slow.
Okay.
But he can't ever get above a C.
That's harsh.
He's an average snapper, right?
I don't know. I can't grade long snappers.
You know, he's smart, 28 on the Wunderlich. But the Packers aren't sold on him. I mean, he's got $1 million base coming up. If they bring him back, that's his veteran's minimum for his level of years experience. They signed a former Michigan State Spartan, Mr. Tabor Pepper. They signed him right after the year, January 27. So I don't know if they're going to bring Goode back or not.
It'll be interesting to
see.
They
might not. Yeah, they definitely might not. All right, so that takes care of the specialists, Mike.
And real quick, did you want to look at the overall ranking that you were talking about
sure.
with the Dallas Morning News?
Yeah. Rick Goslin of the Dallas Morning News has been breaking down NFL special teams since about 1985 or 6. And his rankings came out Sunday. And Green Bay finished 29th. Last year, the first year under Ron Zook, they finished 17th. Under Sean Slocum, his 6 years, they were in order, starting in 09, 31st, 29, tied for 13, 12, 19, and 32. Zook has gone 17 and 29. The Eagles under Dave Phipp finished first. The Lions under Joe Marciano finished second. Marciano was hired by the Lions. He's a veteran guy, 63 years old, was hired by the Lions that same winter that the Packers promoted Ron Zook. The Chiefs were third under the great Dave Taube, T-O-U-B, Taube, who's been up here all those years under Lovie Smith. New England was sixth, Atlanta 14. In the division, Minnesota 15, Bears 27. And the booby prize goes to the San Diego Chargers in there at number 32.
Well, it was definitely a step back for the special teams. There's no doubt about it. The kick return game that was dynamic at times last year with Jeff Janis was basically non-existent. The punt return game was also non-existent for the majority of the season. And their coverage units, their kickoff coverage was worst in the league. Their opponents had the best starting field position of any team in the league. And so there were definitely some big drawbacks, and Zook's going to have to answer for those either throughout the winter or during the spring.
He finished minus one in turnover differential. That would be Trevor Davis's fumble at Tennessee, you said, Mike, right?
Yes.
Right. He was a minus one last year, so I think he's minus two for 2 years. They just don't take the ball away, and they really didn't make any big plays this year. So that's the Packers, 29th on teams.
And we've given the fans more than they've ever had, Bob. This is an hour and 9 minutes right now, so I think we need to depart. But remind everybody what we've got on the way out here.
Well, we have Mr. Al Giroux. We're in this love together out of 1981, 36 years ago. The late Al Giroux passed away Sunday. Let's give him a listen, Mike. He's a great one.
All right, sounds good. Everybody enjoy the song, and we'll be back next week to talk about the defense. See you guys soon.